Hello, 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 drama listeners. It's Connor. Hi. Thank you so much for joining us for another brand new episode of Drama with Connor and Dylan McDowell. You are going to be obsessed with this episode with Christopher Sieber. So tell me, listener, how much have you heard of us? Well, I don't know how to rhyme this after that, but I was obviously trying to quote Death Becomes Her. Oh my God, I ruined the joke, but I'm obsessed with that show. I'm obsessed with him, obviously. We get into so much more, and you're going to love it. If you've not heard us before, and you're gagging obsessed, et cetera, and you want even more drama, I have great news for you. We have a bonus content platform on Patreon, and we call it Drama Plus. At Drama Plus, you spend $5 a month and you get access to bonus episodes of the podcast where Dylan and I talk about all things theater, pop culture, love, and life. It's a true deep dive. And bonus to that, you get added to our Instagram close friends. So go to patreon.com/thedramapodcast to become a member of Drama Plus. Enjoy this episode with Christopher Sieber. Send it around to all of your friends and go ahead and hit that subscribe button. We love you so much. Happy fall and see you in a few seconds. Time for the show.
Press play. Curtain up and now we're in. It's time to take a spin.
The shade and tea to spill.
Ooh, drama. Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book? Who got nom?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today? Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more. Drama.
Drama.
Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life.
I am Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell.
Dylan, I'm so excited.
Dream guest to start it off, but I also have to say, I think we're going to be his new favorite twins by the end of this
Oh,
show.
hell yeah.
Yeah,
I
he
love
has
this.
some experience with, you know, people who we stand on their shoulders.
We do. We do. In the long line of, you know, twins in the media.
Queer media, even.
Well, okay. We really, really have a lot to live up to with the Olsen twins.
I know.
But we're up for the challenge.
We're on our way. We're well on our way.
Yeah. I was always so jealous of them.
I know. There's a gap in the market for twins. I've been saying this for a while.
There really is. I can't think of any other famous twins right now. I mean, not that we're famous, but I mean, other than the Olsen twins.
We're working on it.
The Sprouse twins, the Mowry sisters, of course.
Yeah.
I guess that's
But
it.
that's the list.
Anyway, Dylan, I need to just bring him in. There's so much to discuss. We
I
got to
know.
dive in. So
We're
I'm going
already
to.
having fun.
I know. Oh my God. He's so breezy and
Yeah.
like charming. Okay. Our guest today is a true showman and musical comedy icon currently starring in Death Becomes Her on Broadway as Ernest Menville. You'll know him from his nearly 3 decades of memorable theater credits, including The Prom, Company, Monty Python, Spamalot, Matilda, Pippin, Shrek, La Cage aux Folles, Chicago, Thoroughly Modern Millie, Into the Woods, Beauty and the Beast, and Triumph of Love. For his side-splitting turn as Sir Dennis Galahad in Spamalot, he was nominated for his first Tony Award and made his West End debut in the same role. Our guest earned subsequent nominations for the Tony Drama Desk, Drama League, and Outer Critics Awards for being on his knees, oh my God, in Shrek the Musical as Lord Farquaad. On television, you've seen him in Blue Bloods, Law and Order SVU, The Good Wife, The Good Fight, Elementary, Ed, Sex and City, Pushing Daisies, It's All Relative, Two of a Kind, as well as daytime TV series, Guiding Light, All My Children, and Another World. He's appeared in countless off-Broadway, regional, and touring productions of all of our favorite shows. And this fall, he will appear in Bad Boy the Musical at New York City Center. Please welcome to Drama, Christopher Sieber.
Christopher Sieber. Oh my God, that was the best intro ever.
I'm sweating.
Oh, don't sweat. No, it's okay. It's all right. It's just me. That was such a nice intro. I mean, oh my God, when you said 3 decades, I was like,
That tough to
well,
hear?
your debut is, you know, in utero, so.
Yeah, I came out singing and dancing and hello, my baby.
Well, we know you're in your dressing room. I know our listeners can't quite see it, but it is
It's
stunning.
so well designed.
Thank you. Thank you.
Somebody do it, or did you kind of have input?
No, I do it myself. This is my something I like to do because when you get the rooms, you know, I've been in clearly a lot of Broadway shows, but sometimes, you know, the rooms that you get are just the rooms you get. And you know, you have to work with the space that you get. And they're always just repainted, always just white and bland. And nothing can be pounded into the wall. So everything you see on the walls, I've got Picassos, they're fake. I mean, come on. I don't have Picassos, but these are fake. And then there's a really bad Jackson Pollock over here. And I've got, look, I wanted this to be like a mid-century art museum slash therapist's office.
Okay.
So it looks kind of like if Mad Men had a therapist office.
I love
And
it.
they needed
That's
one, let's
yeah.
be
They
honest.
all needed
And
one.
they and they did. But yeah, so it's a very comfortable, cozy place. And actually my door is always open, except right now because we're doing this. But my door is always open on my on the rooms, and I invite people always in. I've got a coffee maker, and I've got the Nespresso, and I've got a lovely couch over here you can't really see, but
It looks amazing.
People come in and we hang out and we just chat, and I closed door meetings many times with cast members who just want to vent, and but it's a very nice place. It's a very comfortable place, and I'm very happy with it.
I
So
love it. I love the ambient lighting.
yeah,
Well, gays love, warm soft, or soft lighting, as
we
they
don't like
say.
overhead lighting. No. Yeah, I had them install all these fabulous sconces. Again, they're just stuck to the wall with like those three
Yeah,
young
command
strips.
strips, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, there's probably like probably 100 strips
Dang.
just holding everything up. If it gets a little moist in here, things are falling off the wall everywhere. But
Is this the same dressing room you had when you were in Beauty and the Beast, or
no, this is my second time here at the L'Enfantin Theater, where Death Becomes Her is playing. And get your tickets now, get your tickets now, because we're usually sold a lot. So guys listening, get your tickets to the show because it is always full. And we're grateful. Yes. So to answer your question, no, this room was, I believe, Bill Nabel was here, and who else? They played the Corkscrew, and who else was in here? I think he was the Salt Shaker, maybe, was in this room.
Love.
And I was upstairs on the last floor of actual dressing rooms when I signed the Beauty and the Beast. I was doing Beauty and the Beast.
Yes.
Sorry. This, to clear that. Why I said Corkscrew and Salt
Yeah.
Shaker. People are okay, great.
Yeah.
No, so I did Beauty and the Beast here. I played guest on here at this theater, and my dressing room was at the very top floor over here. And they, when I signed the contract, they said, "Oh, you're gonna love your dressing room. It's in the penthouse." And I was like, "Oh, well, that's nice." No, it was fine, but it's like six flights up.
Ooh, they wanted you to have the strongest glutes possible to be guest
They and I
on.
did, and I did. And I did, but it's also where I met my husband Kevin,
Yes.
and he was the fork, and I
Oh
was guest on. So of course it was a match made in heaven. I mean,
my God.
you
Did you
know.
have like a little crush on him from the start when you saw him in his fork
Well, it's funny you should ask. No,
outfit?
like a true, like, what is that, romantic comedy where the heroes really just like hate each other. I
Yeah.
didn't necessarily, we didn't hate each other. But he was very, like, we used to work out at the same gym, and he would, I would see him because, my God, look at him. He's adorable. He's amazing. But I would see him, and I'd just look at him, and he'd sneer at me through the, in the mirror, he's just like, And I was like, I don't know what is that guy's problem? I didn't even know his name. I didn't even know his name.
You know he was in the industry though? Like when
Yeah, I
you Okay.
knew clearly he was in the industry because he was always with Broadway folk and stuff. But we weren't at that point. I was doing another show, and I didn't know him. And so who's this hot guy sneering at me all the time? What is this problem? And then I joined the company here at the L'Enfantin Theater, and I people said, "Oh, well, Kevin normally does this. Kevin normally does this track." I was like, "But he was on vacation for 2 weeks, and so I didn't meet this Kevin for 2 weeks." And then all of a sudden, this Kevin shows up. I'm using air quotes for those listening at home. This Kevin shows up, and it's the sneering guy from the gym.
Oh my God.
And then I'm like, "Ugh, that one." And then we slowly became friends, and we were friends. We were friends before we even had a little like, "Oh, well, there's something here." Oh, yeah. And so we kind of were able. The cool thing about how it all happened was that we were friends, and we kind of would tell each other everything because there was no stakes, There was no, "I wonder if he's going to like me or anything." No, because we had no idea. So we both knew what each other had done in the past, I will say. And so even after all that, we still liked each other.
Aww.
So it's been almost 25 years now. So
Oh my God, congratulations. How long did
yeah,
you date before you're married now, right?
we're married now. We got married in 20, 10, 20, November 2010. And
Okay.
so yeah.
So pre-equality for all
Well,
Supreme
yeah,
Court
it
judges.
was New York State allowed it. So
Okay.
we called it the drive-by. We called it the drive-by wedding because New York State allowed it. And so we got married. I was doing Lacage on tour. And I said, I've got a break, so let's get married. And it happened to be Thanksgiving. So we had friends over. And our friend Adam did the officiant. And in our living room, in the apartment in New York City, it was, we called it the drive-by because I was like, do you? Yeah. Okay, great. Fine. Sign it. Because we wanted to get it just in case they took it away.
Yeah. Different time. It's crazy. 15
years
ago.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
That's a beautiful story though. I'm so happy for you. You guys are such a great example of love and this enemies to lovers trope going on.
It never gets old. It gets old. No, I'm kidding.
But you stay forever young. Forever.
You know, moisturizer, sunscreen, use it. I recommend it to everybody.
Okay, taking that note.
I will say this, and I have seen people from that I went to high school with. And they will show up sometimes. I don't do the stage door here because it's a little dangerous. But back in the day when I'd do the stage door, there's a couple, the show before, like company and stuff, I'd see people that I went to high school with. And what happened? Oh my God. It's like, I think this business keeps me young, or it's just the constant moisturizing and facial cleansing and the sunscreens or something like that. Because the people that I am 56. I have no problem saying I'm 56 years old. But these people look like they're 90. And I'm like, what happened to you?
Maybe they're outdoors more, you know? You're in the dark theater some afternoons and nights.
Maybe, but I don't know. But anyway, that's a
sign. You don't look a day over 39, Christopher.
You stop it. Stop it.
Well, listen, we're finding you in your dressing room. You're in the middle of this run. It's almost been a year of this hit musical, one of our favorites. It's currently on Broadway. And of last season, honestly. Are you well?
Yes, I am well. I am well. As did you guys see this? You saw the show, right? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Okay. Great.
Brought mom and dad. Even,
too. Oh, thank you very much. Thank you. As you saw, we never stop. So Jennifer, Megan, myself, we never stop for 2 hours and 20 minutes. And even though we have an intermission, we're changing costume and just like getting a glass of water. And so we are exhausted. But it is so much fun to do. The one thing we have all found, Megan, Jennifer, and myself, and even Michelle, we cannot do any other thing except this show during this show. Mm. We can't sing another song. We really can't, because our voices now are so trained to do this crazy vocal screaming, yelling, shouting, belting that we do during this performance. And so if you try and sing, you know, like a smoky ballad, it's not going to happen. We can't do anything else. You can hear my voice sounds kind of tired right now, just because that's the way it lives now, just by doing the show. But other than that, yeah. I mean, we're having a great time. The audiences are loving the show every single performance, which is awesome. We hear all the time that it's their favorite, people's favorite show of the season and or on Broadway right now. Mm-hmm. And the greatest thing I think about this experience too is having to help create the show. We all kind of came up with the idea in the readings and the workshops that we don't want a lesson. Please don't make us do a lesson. Mm-hmm. There's no message in this show. There's no lesson to learn. There's no tale of woe. There's nothing. It is pure comedy. And any sentimentality that ever comes into the show is literally from, and it's usually my character, is shoved off stage.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's exactly what we need right now. Everybody out there in the world, because the world's crazy. We don't need a lesson. All right. We don't need that. We just want to giggle. And you will giggle for 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Isn't that interesting how art will reflect the times that we're in?
Yeah.
And sometimes when all is well, we're like, okay, let's have a darker, you know, more serious British play or something like that. Right.
That's
now.
What happened a couple seasons ago before, I think it was right before this past season, this past Tony, the previous Tony Awards almost. And it's just the way it happens. What you just said, our art does reflect and to get things on Broadway, it takes some time. So that lesson might've been a couple years old, but even so it's a relative lesson. And that particular Broadway season before this last one, every show had a message and a lesson, and it was like slit your wrists in a way, and it was like, okay, lighten up everybody. But it's just the way it happened. It wasn't planned. It just happened that all these shows had, you know, the suffragists and like, I can't even, that's the one thing, but every one of them had
Moody Boys in Oklahoma.
Yeah. It was just like, oh, tale of woe, and like, no, we don't want that. We don't want that.
And I'm just so relieved that Death Becomes Her delivered on, you know, I think there was a lot of pressure, incredible cast that everyone loves, amazing, beloved movie,
But then it's this own thing. And it is, I mean, everyone that I've talked to who's seen it has loved it, and it just overpassed any expectations.
Yeah,
Absolutely.
we were able to because Marco Panett, who's our who wrote the book for it, he's a sitcom writer, but he got the rights to the movie about 8.5 years ago, almost nine now, probably nine. And he was able to because he's such a funny writer and he's such a funny person that he said, "I'm going to keep all the things that everybody wants to see." And he did. And then he took it his own way in his own direction. We made it our own together, all of us. And I'm so grateful for that because, you see a lot of what we're seeing a lot now is a lot of movies,
Adaptations, yeah.
adaptations, movies made into musicals. And there have been a few that they just do the movie and they shove some songs in there. And but it just makes it longer. It doesn't make it better. And it's not like it's like, oh, yeah, it's the movie. But then they're going to sing a song about it. We and Marco and Noel Carey and Julia Madison, the three of them working together, they wrote the score and
Yeah.
lyrics. They working together, it's like they wrote as one person, but they all agreed too. It's like, let's give the fans of the movie what they want, but also give them something new and make it go like this the entire time. Just bang, 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 bang. And the pace of the show is so fast.
It really
With
is. A pace that quick. I mean, and you're fantastic in it, by the way. I don't know if we
Thank you.
mentioned that,
Thank
but
you.
star. I feel like it's a moving train. You jump on, it happens. But do you have moments in the show that every night you're so excited to see what the audience is going to think about it?
Well, yeah. I mean, and it's also mostly terror because there are certain things that they're very difficult. There's a lot of comedy in here that's really I call this kind of comedy the like the wet paper towel stuff where you there's that commercial with the grapes on the paper towel and like look how
Oh, I
strong it
love
is.
those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So imagine adding another grape to it and then it goes and it breaks. That's what a lot of the comedy that we do in the show, even though it's broad and it's campy and it's crazy over the top, you still have to believe it. So there's got to be that weird tension. And it's terrifying because it's so intricate. It's so tiny. And if you go too far, the audience will turn on you in a second. And if you don't do enough, then they're like, yeah. And, or they'll think you're trying too hard to get them laugh. And so there's it most of the things, yes, I can't wait for the audience to see the show all the time. But there are certain things that I personally just am like, ah, I hope they like this. Ah, like The Plan, my song in Act Two, which is crazy. And it's a patter song that doesn't stop. And you cannot stop. And if you and I oh, just last week, and I will say this, every now and then your brain shuts down. And last week I went into what we call the white room.
I've heard of
Where,
that.
oh yes, where you just your brain says, you know what? What about this white room? And you're on stage, spotlight, everybody's looking, 1,500 people watching it, the orchestra's playing, everything's going, and you're like, where am I? Where am I? Is this, oh wow, look at these padding walls. Look at, this is lovely. Oh yes. Oh, I'm in a show. And that moment, and you literally can't think of a thing. You can't think of where you are. It happens to every single person, always. And it's terrifying because it also, and it'll feel, it's probably like a split second, but actually it feels like 38 hours.
I can't even imagine. That sounds
Yeah.
awful,
Is your
though.
body keeping going though?
Like, is your
Yeah. It's a, well, yeah, there's a weird thing because sometimes your body will keep going. And that's what you're grateful for. Sometimes you just like your body goes, oh, yeah, we do this. I'm like, oh, thank God. But there are times when everything just like, no, we don't know what we're doing. And it just happens. It doesn't happen very often, thank goodness. But yeah, it does happen.
Oh, at this point in the run, are you able to play with that number a little bit more, or is it very, very specifically tuned? Because it's a feat what you do, progressively getting drunker and drunker on
Yeah,
stage.
yeah. Well, Chris Catelli was so nice to me because actually, I'll tell you now, this is an exclusive for you all.
Drama
Oh,
exclusive,
drama
drama
exclusive.
exclusive.
That song was going to be cut. And I, along with Marco, said, please give me a chance to make this something that it is. I mean, it was a funny song and we needed this for Ernest, but it at the time during readings and whatnot, it seemed to just stop the show.
Okay.
And I told Gatelli, let me go crazy with this and I will make it work. And I did because Gatelli basically said, go do what you need to do. And so what you saw up on stage was all me. I came up with everything that you see up there, except for a few things that Catelli suggested. And like, you know, he's very good at guiding. But for the most part, what you saw up there was all me and all my doing from just the suggestion of a song. And I'm very happy and very proud of it. The weird part about rehearsing that is because of the nature of the size of the show with the set pieces and everything like that. There was no way during tech for me to ever rehearse the song with all those crazy props and all that movement and the spray cans and all this 3,000 props to do it without being in front of an audience. So I only got to, it was truly trial by fire. I had to do it in front of an audience, and that's how I developed the thing. I knew things were funny instinctually, but I wasn't sure if it was going to be clear to the audience. If it wasn't clear, then I had to fix it. So that number in particular, I'm very proud of, but is also very terrifying because it is so intricate and you cannot stray. You cannot stray because it is a house of cards.
Yeah.
And it's one of those songs that I asked my understudies, Bud and Ryan, who during vacation, they went on, and I said, please do not feel weird about asking me about anything. This is all my fault and I'm sorry. So if you need help with anything, I am not protective of my baby at all. This is ours. So, but I created a monster for you and I'm sorry.
What a beautiful creative gift to be given in a project like this.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Really amazing.
Oh yeah. It was incredible that this song existed in the reading, and I went to Duane Reade or Walgreens and bought those Avion spray bottles.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I even bought these. Wait, where are they? Where are they? Here. These are, ooh, the folks at home can't see, but these are the Ernest glasses. So these are, these are literally my costume glasses.
Oh my God. Wait. Tell me, Ernest.
I know. Where'd Siebert go?
Ooh. I know. It's like a Clark Kent moment right now.
Yeah. So, but these are Duane Reade sunglasses that I popped the lenses out. And now they're in a Broadway.
That's so Broadway.
This was, I, this is, these are original. These are original. Yeah. But it's crazy. I mean, and so I kind of started with that and just the reading and just started futzing with things. And then before you knew it, it grew into this number, and grateful for that because, you know, that doesn't happen. And it's nice having a director choreographer who trusts his actors exquisitely.
Yeah.
And lets us go and play. And he's very good at like forming and guiding and putting it all together. He's really good, but he really trusted us. And that is something that doesn't happen very often. So
oh, I'll bet. I'm sure there's been moments in your career where you maybe wouldn't even feel confident enough to speak to the director about advocating for yourself in that way.
Oh yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm grateful. I say grateful a lot because I'm grateful for my everything,
yes.
But I use that phrase a lot because I do believe the gratitude really does help your life and your world.
Yes. I always say gratitude is like the key to joy.
It really is. It really is. And it's like just grateful for the day. So it's all good. But yeah, in the early years, yeah, I didn't know that you could not necessarily question, but have questions. I would just say, okay, yeah. Mm-hmm, okay. Okay. But now that I've been doing this so long that they do trust me, I mean, that's the thing that comes with a nice career, and how and why you get a career is because people trust you. Mm-hmm. People trust you with their material. And I'm grateful. I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for the trust. And I do not take that for granted. And so, yeah, that it is. It's been great. And now, and I also want to see what they have. I mean, you know, yeah. if it's a truly collaborative thing, I really want to know what do they want. And then if they're able to and they're willing to, which most now are, to work with you and just like, yeah, let's see what happens. That's the greatest experience of all, because magic happens then.
Oh, I'll bet. That's amazing.
Yeah.
We're talking about Death Becomes Her now, but I want to go back to when you figured out that you loved the arts. We call it Ring of Keys moment.
Oh, Ring of Keys.
We borrow this fun home. So we're like, oh, maybe this was like a moment of recognition where you were watching a movie or singing in the choir or you heard a song or something. And we're like, oh my God, I love this. I identify with this. I've got to be a part of this. Do you feel like you can pinpoint a moment?
There was a couple, but one, it was in, I think it was third grade. And I had some teachers, I have a very small town in northern Minnesota. And I had some teachers that said, hey, we're going to send you to a gifted school 3 times a week in Minneapolis. And so I would get on a little bus and I would go to the Children's Theater of Minneapolis, and they had this little pilot program called Omnibus. And that was part where I got to be in a production of a show called The Cookie Jar. And I don't know if I was oatmeal raisin or chocolate chip or whatever, but I played a cookie. I was a cookie. I was in third grade. Had no idea what the hell was going on, why I was there, what I was doing. But I remember being in front of an audience, and it was like, I think it was probably most likely the children's theater. So it was a student matinee. And I heard the audience giggle and laugh. And I was like, what was that? I like that a lot. I will continue to do this and forever and ever and ever. And that was the bite. And then in the fourth grade, I think it was the fourth grade Christmas program at the elementary school, I played Colonel Cudley I was a stuffed bear of some sort. And I played Colonel Cudley. And so even as a fourth grader, I had a British accent and a mustache that I made out of, I think, electric tape. And I was like, I heard laughter from the crowd. I was like, yeah, I think I know what I'm doing. Yeah.
Wow. So your teacher saw something in you that was a bit, you know, eccentric perhaps, or?
Probably. I hope so. You know, throughout my school, elementary, middle school, and high school, I had wonderful teachers. Elementary, they saw something in me. I still didn't know what the hell was going on. I still didn't know. And then middle school, Mr. Engstrom was our choir teacher, and he said, we're doing a spring concert. Would anybody like to do a solo? And I said, me. And this was eighth grade. And he said, what do you want to sing? And I said, I want to sing Neil Diamond's Love on the Rocks. And he said, what? I said, I want to sing Neil Diamond, Love on the Rocks, the jazz singer, the album came out. And he said, why? You're eighth grade. I don't think that's appropriate. And I said, no. And I said these words out loud. Listen to this lick. And I was like, first they say they want you singing like Neil Diamond. First they say they want you, they really need you. Suddenly you find your eighth grade.
You little legend.
And then in high school, I had three teachers, Jane Gillis, Deb Bendix, and Henry Hebert, who literally had come some kind of intervention with me in the English teacher's lounge. And they sat me down like an intervention and told me, you have to get out of here. And in a good way. They said, you need to go to New York. You need to go to Los Angeles. You can't stay here. And I cried and I burst into tears, and they were right. And I did. And here I am. Look at this. They were right.
Oh my goodness. Well, they also knew that you would be very wrinkly and look 90 at this point in time if you would have stuck around.
Totally. By then.
Yeah. Now, during this journey where you're kind of discovering your love for the arts, you obviously are an openly gay man. Were you having an identity journey simultaneously, or when did you kind of come out and figure all that stuff out?
Well, you know, I grew up in a rural town, and there probably were plays. I was there, you know, but that's one of the reasons I think the teacher saw something in me that it was like there was no creative, sparkly, dancey outlet for, you know, a sparkly, extroverted child. And I looking back, I thought it was pretty clear. But, you know, and I had some relations in the middle school and innocent stuff, but,
yeah.
and then in high school, a little more, less innocent, but, and then, yeah, still kind of in the closet when I was 18, when I moved to New York, but I knew when I was in fourth grade, you know,
sure. Yeah.
And, but I didn't know what it was. And now, you know, yeah. And once it was so easy, but I remember coming when I moved to New York and seeing like our friends, we kiss each other. That's what we do.
Yeah.
As men, we see friends, no matter who they are, we will kiss you. We were like, well, hi, honey. That's what we do. And when the first time I saw that in New York City at 18 years old with two men just going, I love you, honey, mwah, like that, I was like, oh, wow, that's possible. And then I was shocked. I was absolutely shocked and blown away by that at first. And then I was like, oh, yeah, it's not. Why was I making such a big deal out of it after all these years? Mm. And no, it's not. And it's easy. And then when I was doing the TV show, It's All Relative, I played with John Benjamin Hickey. We played two fathers. with a daughter going to Harvard. And we're both gay men and we're both out. And the Advocate and the Out magazine wanted to do a thing on this. And they asked, like, so is this national coming out? And I was like, no, I was never in, you know? And it's just like, guys, it's not a big deal. And also as a community, as gay men, stop making it a big deal. It's okay. You're going to be okay.
Yeah.
It's interesting because going through your resume, I feel like aside from Lacage, you don't play many gay roles on stage, do you?
No, I don't. I don't mind to, but Lacage is one of those shows that I think one should do because either George or Alban, and I did both of them.
Yes. Versatile, baby. Come on.
Yeah. And, but also, you know, it's just the way it happens. I don't know. I know you might be, maybe Farquaad was gay. Probably.
Maybe.
Queer. Yeah. Maybe. Farquaad. Yeah. You know, but there's a little sparkle in, I think, every one of my characters.
Sure. Well, and plus it gives you the chance to play opposite so many iconic women.
Oh God. Oh God. Yeah. That's fun. And that working with like Jennifer and Megan, and I've worked with Patty now, of course, and we're old friends and all these incredible, incredible women I've worked with. And I've learned over the years, get out of their way. And that's all. I adapt around them because I am that is kind of something that I'm just going to let that be. And I'm going to get out of the way and I'll go, oh, okay. And then you jump in the scene. But for the most part, you let them be. And do not try and, I don't know, it'd be like trying to do a duet with like one of the greatest tenors of all time, you know, or something, jumping in and trying to do Nessun Dorma with Pavarotti. Don't, let him do it. Let him do it. And then just sneak in and find your little way and find your place in there.
Wait, as you're talking about singing with tenor, you know, duets, et cetera, I'm thinking about, we were in Into the Woods when we were in high school and I played Rapunzel's Prince and I definitely was copying your voice. From listening to that cast album.
Yeah, good.
Beautiful, beautiful. I mean, good. I got great reviews for doing my Christopher Seber impression.
I'm so glad. There was so funny. There was, because, you know, James Lapine and Steve Sondheim, we got the chance to redo, they got a chance to redo the things that they didn't ever finish for the original because they just ran out of time. So that's what we were able to do with the new song and a couple of new little ideas and stuff in there. And James Lapine was, and I'll say this, he knows this, but out of town in Los Angeles, we were at the Amundsen Theater. And there's a couple moments where I would just say, always 10 feet below. And it's on the soundtrack. You can hear it.
Yeah.
And then there was another one too, where after the song, you hear Rapunzel, I think it's act two, and you hear Rapunzel just going crazy in the background. She screams across the back. She's like, ah! And Rapunzel's prince just stands there and he says, Rapunzel. And it gives a huge laugh.
Yeah.
James Lapine was pissed off at me. He said, what are you doing? I was like, I don't know. What am I doing? He says, why are you getting such a big laugh there? I was like, I don't know. You wrote it. but he was like, you're doing something. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I really don't. I'm just saying the words below. And he said, don't say it like that. I said, below. And he says, that's not, James, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. And then the Rapunzel. When she runs by, he said, you're doing something. I said, I promise you I'm not. I will say it even more dumb, bland, whatever you need me to do. And I literally did the least energy, least anything. And I just went, Rapunzel. And it got a bigger laugh. He said, what are you doing? I was like, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
You're so funny.
Yeah. We know, Christopher, I have to ask you, we've mentioned a lot of the credits that you, from your amazing career, is there any role or performance that you're so proud of?
There, you know, there was a couple. I mean, I really love Spamalot. That was amazing. That was not even work. That was just going to work and playing with your friends for 2 hours and working with the great Mike Nichols and Casey Nicola, who I've actually had known for a long time before he even became a choreographer and director. And that cast, it was not only filled with like these amazing stars, but Mike Nichols told us there are no stars in the show. And David and Hank and Sada and Tim and all of us, we never approached it like, oh, it's David Hyde Pierce. Oh, it's Hank Azaria. It's Tim Curry. Oh, wow. Look at these. Ah, no. It was never that. Backstage, on stage, we were always just the group. And he called it, which is the greatest thing ever, and I learned so many lessons from that, is a comic amoeba, you know? So nobody gets the laugh. We all get the laugh. And it's all accumulative. So no one's getting, like, you know, there's always the straight guy and then there's the punchline guy. But in this one, everyone is the star. So as a group, because that's what the Pythons were a group. And yes, they did funny things, but they all did it together. And that was a magical moment. And then the prom, of course, because it was like, I was just working with friends. I mean, Casey Nicola, Matt Sklar, Chad Beglin, Bob Martin, Beth, Angie, Brooks, myself. We were, can we swear on this show?
Oh yeah.
Okay. We were fucking around and it ended up in a Broadway show. we were fooling around and with this idea that Jack Fertel came up with, and that's what it was. So a lot of the stuff, most of the stuff you see on stage during that show was Beth, Brooks, Angie, and me just improvising and ended up in the show. And so when you see other people do the show, which I have, it's fantastic. I see them struggle because it is so, right. It is us. Yeah. It is so us that I was like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I created something and I'm so sorry. Not so much me. I mean, yeah, the two songs are tough because it's Brooks's role is a bear, you know, and Beth too, but they created that thing. I guess it's kind of cool. I guess when you look back and you think somebody doing the part you did and they're like, how did you do this? Right. There's a lot of those that I did. Like Shrek, people, I still get emails and texts from and letters from around the world. Like, how did you do this? And I reach out to a lot of them and find out if what are you doing? Please don't hurt yourself. Whatever you do, don't hurt yourself.
Sure, that's a whole other podcast. I mean, it's really cool. You've left your mark on so many roles. And also, I noticed this from your career. You'll see it through to the end. You tend to stick around in a lot of these things, and they feel like yours then.
Yeah, I like sticking around. I mean, I've stayed too long at the fair at a couple shows. and when I had a friend once say, if you're not having fun, you're doomed to walk. What was it? You're doomed to walk the Broadway Living Dead. And there are long-running shows that people have been in forever and the longest time. And they are the Walking Dead because they're literally just going through it. And that's great. If you want to do that, that's fine. Creatively for me, that would drive me absolutely insane.
Yeah.
And when you stay too long at a show, you will definitely know it's time for you to go.
Sure.
Because if you start resenting it, if you start hating your job, everything bothers you, it's like, okay. No, it should be fun. It should be fun. Yes, it's work, but it should be a delight.
Yeah. Yes. Are you excited to take a little break from Death Becomes Her and go do Bat Boy?
I'm terrified, of course, because I have imposter syndrome like you wouldn't believe. So I just got the script the other day and I'm very excited about it. I'm excited about working with Alex Timbers. We had a wonderful meeting a couple of days ago and we, you know, it's like one of those Broadway things where you know everybody, but you don't necessarily get to chat with them. And so Alex and I had a really great conversation. And then I worked with my friend Carrie Butler again and Marissa Jarrett Winoker and a bunch of other cool people. And it's going to be crazy. I mean, it's such a cult hit too. So it's going to be crazy.
I can't wait. Oh my God. It's going to be so fun. Okay. Listen, we could talk to you forever, Christopher.
Right. I know.
Sadly,
me too.
Got to wrap. Before we go, we like to end with a dose of drama. This is like a little pop culture recommendation. This could be that show you've been binging, that book you've been reading, that artist you can't stop listening to. Do you have anything on your mind that you've just been living for?
I wrote things down. Hold on. Let me see. Okay. So Immortals. You guys read books?
Yeah.
Okay.
Course.
There's an author out there. I don't have any of his books. They're all at home. But Immortals wrote A Gentleman in Moscow and The Rules of Civility and Table for Two. And he's written another book, and I wish I had it here. If you ever read his novels, you will be drawn into his stories in a split second, because it's like someone sitting there with you, and he is there, sitting there, and telling you this story and you are wrapped with it, because not only is he just an amazing storyteller, but the descriptions in which he does, it brings you into the world and you can see it all. And very few writers, like Truman Capote was very good. And I'm a big fan of Truman Capote as well. So that's another pop culture thing, sort of over whatever. But Immortals, I mean, I have read his books and I've got one more to go through, but you will devour them and they're so good. And it takes you away to a world. And he likes, there's a couple, like The Gentleman in Moscow is astonishing. The Table for Two is kind of like a film noir Hollywood. It's really fun. It's like mystery. Oh, I love that kind of stuff. And there's, and there's a couple times in the book where you're like, oh, no. So, but Immortals is, he's this amazing writer. And he's from New York.
Oh my gosh. Well, we'll definitely have to look it up. That's an amazing recommendation. Thank you for everything, Christopher. We're going to let you go.
Okay, I got to go do a thing.
Great time with you today. So thank you for doing this. You'll have to come back and chat with us a little bit more.
Sure, why not?
I know, I didn't even get to ask you about Sex and the City.
We'll get to this part two then.
Well, we'll see you next time. And everyone's got to go see Death Becomes Her. Thank you so much, Christopher.
All right, guys. Bye.
Christopher obviously had to go. He's booked and busy today. But I did want to share a dose of drama. Personally.
Yeah, please. First of all, how are we feeling about this episode? I feel like I could have talked to him for hours.
I call these types of guests, you know, when you and I have our running behind the scenes document, I call these the legacy guests because they have so many things to talk about. And sometimes we play games where we're like, just tell us one memory from this or that. But I mean, I think this is his 13th Broadway show.
I think 15th.
That's insane.
I love when guests offer up stories and stuff. He's like talking about Shrek. He's talking about the prom. He's talking about
so he, hit on it still.
He really did. So I loved it, but absolutely obsessed with him. Can't wait to work with him on Bat Boy, by the way.
I know. I'm excited. Amazing. Connor and Christopher got to chat about that before we hit record. No, I had the best time. I love him. I've always loved him.
But y'all need to look up pictures of him as Gaston. It's going to be your new like printing out and putting on in your locker at school. It's going to be your phone background.
There's that picture of young Biden that used to go around or recently,
ice cream.
But yeah, or there's that new picture of Gavin Newsom as like trade back in the day.
Yes. Oh my God. But anyway, Dylan, I'm curious about your dose of drama this week.
I am a huge River Phoenix fan and you love him too. There is a new podcast, which, you know, I always hesitate to suggest another podcast.
It's okay. We support our friends.
I'm just kidding. Yeah. There is a new podcast called Variety Confidential that did a 4-part episodic series about the life, career, and death of River Phoenix. It is amazing. It's inspired me to go and check out some of his films that I'd never seen before, like his Oscar-nominated movie. I seriously can't recommend it enough. And it's so beautiful and sad. But if you're looking for like a... I know a lot of people these days really want series, especially for long car rides. And it's 4 parts and it's really, really good.
You recommended this to me and I listened to all 4 within like 24 hours. And it was so good.
It's good.
It was so good. It did that thing though where it plays a clip again and again and again. I get like documentaries doing that for a
commercial break type
commercial
moment.
Break, but it was kind of awkward, but they did a great job.
Yeah, no, it worked.
Great juicy interviews. The gal, Samantha Mathis, who was dating him at the time of his passing.
Yes.
She was a hard interview.
Yeah.
She was tough. Every question was like, well, hard to say now.
Either she couldn't remember or she was like,
I don't want to say
because he's not here for me, which I got to respect. I think people
but give me some juice.
Yeah. I think people are just so protective of celebrities.
That's for sure. Okay. Loved that. So I definitely recommend that. And my dose of drama, which I have been dying to talk about. We've recorded so many episodes in the last few weeks, but I've just wanted to delay this until I have a second to really dive in. But y'all, The Pitt on HBO Max is my entire life. They are family to me. I mean, I can't believe that 2 weeks ago, I didn't know Dr. Robbie, Nurse Dana, Bangs with an ankle monitor, Melissa King, aka Bryan Cranston's daughter, Twink, who's British in real life, but on the show, he's Whitaker, aka Huckleberry. I did not know these people, and now they are truly everything to me. You have to go and watch The Pitt, everybody. It's 15 episodes taking place over the course of a 15-hour shift in the ER in Pittsburgh, aka The Pitt, and you're just going to eat it up. It's crazy. You'll never believe the twists and turns. I will say the first episode and a half is at a breakneck pace, but it really evens out and ebbs and flows throughout. And so if you're kind of like startled by episode one, hang in there because it's so good. And I know you're hooked on it too.
I know. So this is a funny week where we both have doses where we're not telling each other about something. We both have actually taken advantage of it. I loved The Pitt. I started it slightly after you did. And so it was very fun to text throughout Also, mind y'all, this came out months ago. I think it was coming out throughout the spring. So we're late on the pit, but as long-suffering Grey's Anatomy viewers, I just don't think we had it in our hearts for multiple medical dramas.
Well, and Chris was funny. He was talking about the Broadway Living Dead. And I wanted to say there's some Grey's Anatomy cast members that are Seattle Grace's Living Dead. They are bumping into furniture. They are kind of forgetting their lines mid-scene. Some of them are probably not even there for the coverage of the other scene partner. Obviously, love Grey's forever, but the pit feels very fresh and different.
Yeah, no, I absolutely love it. And season two is coming out in the spring. What I'll also add is I think the pit has solved the problem of two screen viewing. But at that, I mean, I'm sure you listeners know a little bit about when you're on your phone and you have TV on at the same time. And there are some shows that you can do that with, a lot of reality shows, for example, like on Bravo, where they repeat. Speaking of reusing content throughout, the pit, so much is happening. You really can't look away because, 30 seconds later, a new patient is coming into the ER and you have to figure out what they're in for and what's going on. And so I think that it's helped me stay off my phone a little bit more when actually consuming content. And for that reason, I know all the characters' names for a change. And I'm actually very invested and love it so much. So,
And I joke about, bangs with ankle monitor, but of course that's Dr. McKay.
right.
I know the names. I know the names.
Wait, I'm shocked that Huckleberry is British.
He's British. But now that you know,
Yeah.
when you see his big eyes and his like little lips
He
and
looks
mouth,
British. He looks British.
he is so cute. And he's got like a little tan and a little hair product in for season two.
Yes.
So obsessed. Fans online think that character is gay.
I don't think so because of the relationship that he struck up with the farm wife. Or maybe he just had felt the farm connection to
Well,
her.
yeah, because he's also like a farm boy, the Huckleberry. Okay, that writing pissed me off.
I know.
Issa Brion's dialogue is absurd. Oh my
Broadway
God.
star Issa Brion's.
I think it's my favorite TV show of the year.
That is a fun.
New show, new
It's
show.
fun. It's fun at this point to have that. I remember last year when the Menendez brothers came out. I was like, I don't know how anything's going to top this for me. And now looking back, I'm like, LOL. But
But no, but a
at the
show.
time, when a show that absorbs you in and you're just like, can't get enough of it.
Oh, that's for sure. I mean, we obviously all were like very White Lotus in the spring, but in terms of a new show, it's a great binge too.
Original content.
Original, period. Love it.
Well, this was a blast. I'm so happy we had
So
Christopher Seaber
fun.
on.
He's gonna come back.
He definitely has to come back. There are so many things that, I mean, we wrote down so many notes about different topics we wanted to cover,
I
but
know. We didn't get to any of his TV
I wouldn't
stuff.
change a thing about our chat
I
though.
know. Oh my God, you guys definitely go see Death Becomes Her. Christopher is not on social media. So if you're not following the Drama Podcast, follow at Dylan McDowell, follow at Connor McDowell, follow Death Becomes Her on their channels because they do feature him. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Drama.
Yes, we had such a great time. And of course, we'll see you next week. But Connor, I will see you next time. Drama.
Drama.